Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Thank you very much for that, Eileen. Now, as we heard there in the headlines, the Department of Health is reporting 1,408 new cases of COVID-19 today, with 152 COVID patients in hospital, of which 26 are in ICU. Well, this afternoon, the CMO, Tony Houlihan, along with other members of NPHET, gave a briefing on the latest developments around COVID. In a moment, I'm going to be speaking to Dr. Owen De Barra, consultant in infectious diseases at Beaumont Hospital. But first, we might just take a listen to some of what was said this afternoon. Dr. Ronan Glynn, Deputy CMO, spoke about the number of COVID cases and where they are being reported.
So this just shows the 14-day incidence, which is a slide we show on a regular basis. And as we've been reporting for some time, particularly high incidence in Donegal and Louth. This is just looking then in particular at the last 7 days. And there are five counties that have reported more than 400 cases over the past 7 days. They're Dublin, 2,681, Donegal with 700, Cork with 679, Galway with 639, and Louth with 415 cases.
He then went on to speak about the picture in Europe and in the UK.
Almost all countries across the EU and UK have deteriorated substantially. But it's not quite as straightforward as that, because when we look at the most recent 7 days, so the past week versus the previous week, we can see in fact that most countries with very high incidence to the left of the graph there, as you're looking at it, most of those have seen a stabilisation or indeed an improvement over the past week, with the exceptions of both France and Ireland. Obviously, this is very positive, but outlook for those countries and indeed for ourselves remains uncertain over the next number of weeks. In relation to the UK then, it's been well reported that fortunately they've seen a reducing incidence overall in the last week in particular, but they have, despite that, still seen significant numbers in hospital in particular, with almost 5,800 cases in the last 7 days.
Well, we're joined now by Dr. Owen De Barra, and thank you very much, Owen, for joining us this evening. And I might start with that last line there we heard from Dr. Ronan Glynn about what is happening in the UK, because when we got that sort of shock a couple of weeks ago from NPHET that actually things weren't going to be proceeding as we expected and we'd need all the vaccine passes for indoor dining and all of that, a lot of that was predicated on the fact that we wanted to see what was going to happen in the UK before we went ahead with further reopening. So now we're starting to see what's happening in the UK. What do you make of it?
Good evening. I think there's a couple of things about the UK that are very different from us. You know, they had a very open approach to this early on, so there's a lot more baseline infection has occurred. And their REACT study, which looks at that, shows that maybe up to 90% of people in random sampling have been exposed. So they have a kind of a baseline that's quite different from us. Okay. And I think the other part of this is it's about human behaviour and how behaviour will change and has changed between the two islands. The messaging about Freedom Day and it's over has, I think, led to a big change in how people approach it in the UK. And largely that's probably to do with their willingness to go forward for testing. You know, if the messaging is this isn't as serious a thing, then are people really going to present for testing? So we won't see that baseline number that's fallen away, but the hospitalisations are still climbing, which means some people are still unfortunately getting sick and ending up in hospital.
But can we take it then from what you're saying, given the baseline figures of cases in the UK is quite a bit higher given the way they've approached this, that just because their hospitalisations have increased, as Philip Nolan noted in that clip there, that's not necessarily a trend that we could expect to see certainly in the same volume here?
Exactly. I mean, I think we've a different set of parameters here and we've a different, you know, rate of completion. We've seen this week we've just about surpassed the UK in terms of completed vaccinations of the adult population and a slower stepwise opening up. And I think the result of that is we shouldn't see exactly the same patterns as we've seen in the UK.
Now, Philip Nolan also spoke about a step change. He said instead of the virus growing exponentially, it appears that people are going out and about and then when they hear a rise in cases, they're adjusting their behaviour. Let's just have a quick listen to what he had to say about that.
People are much more complex. So what seems to have happened is there was a kind of a pent-up need to socialise, which seems to have socialise and travel, actually, which seems to have been released in early July. And that gave us a set of cases which pushed us worse than the pessimistic scenario.
Now that that seems to be settling, we're tracking more towards central cases. And then I do think there's grounds for optimism, because it seems to me quite clearly that after 18 months or so, people are very clearly reading the risk. And if our collective behaviour starts to push case numbers up, people collectively become more cautious. And that's why I don't expect to track any of these huge waves that one might have, that we modelled.
You know, very positive, really, that, Owen.
Yes, and I think, again, the pandemic is all about human behaviour, and there's many models predicting that this is how it will play out in other countries too, is that the population largely get this and respond to it. So we won't see a large wave, a huge surge, but we'll see lots of dips and hollows, because people will modify their behaviour depending on what they see and what's happening around them.
So then, again, we saw all these sort of quite frightening graphs from NPHET a couple of weeks ago, you know, with their central one and their central two scenario, and they're pessimistic and they're optimistic. And what Philip Nolan seems to be saying there is we're tracking, it's not what he seems to be saying, what he is saying is we're tracking towards the central cases. He doesn't expect a huge big wave. Are we out of the woods, or is it the case that if we say we're out of the woods, then we go back into the woods because people start adjusting their behaviour accordingly?
Yeah, I think this is really it. It's what messaging people are taking from all of the things we're saying. We're not out of the woods, and we need to still plan for bad scenarios, because in terms of the health service and the pressure it's under, we need to be ready for that. But we really hope that things are going to be better, and they're not going to be as bad as they were in previous waves. That much is clear, but we need to still emphasise that the basics work. And we can move ourselves in a better place through this by working collectively.
CMO Tony Hoolan, he also spoke about how COVID is now a disease of the young. So can we take from that the older age groups are effectively safe, or as safe as we can make them?
Well, they're not as safe as we can make them, but that comes with its own restrictions. Largely it's a disease of the young, but the outcomes for and potential outcomes for the elderly or those with underlying conditions remain. The worrisome thing on the horizon is what level of vaccine immunity wane there will be. You know, the talk in the UK and in the US, the reviews of boosters for, you know, whether you pick an age category or a compromised group, those are going to become a reality at some point in time. And then the protection for them comes from the other announcement today, which is vaccinating younger people. Mm. And a lot of the drive there is that it protects those in whom the vaccines may not work. So vaccines aren't 100%. These have been highly effective and a highly effective program of rolling it out. But in some individuals, it won't work. So the better protection for them is limiting their contacts with people who are unvaccinated.
Sorry, the better protection for older people is limiting the contact, is it?
Yeah, it's still going to be limiting their contact with those who might transmit the virus to them. So part of this drive about vaccinating the young is that the young who largely don't get sick from this, don't become a source of COVID for older people in whom the vaccine might work well.
Okay, because I know Dr. Karina Butler was talking about this a few minutes ago, or at the NPHET briefing today, and she was giving a message to parents of children aged 12 to 15 years. We might just have a listen to exactly what she had to say.
My message to parents of children in that age group would be, if you have a child with an underlying medical condition, absolutely avail of it at the earliest opportunity. If you have a child, for example, that is living in a household where there are other people at risk, absolutely avail of it at the earliest opportunity. For all parents in those groups and parents of healthy children as well, I would say think about it, think about COVID, think about your own situation. Be reassured that this vaccine is very effective at preventing COVID. We can't deny that there are risks associated with vaccine. We know that children will suffer the usual risks of sore arm and fatigue and everything as adults have done, and that they're relatively minor. They might be a little bit stronger than, for example, in someone who's age 60 or so, but they're minor and short-lived. We know that there has been one very rare risk identified associated with the RNA vaccines, and that has been an inflammation of the heart, either the heart muscle or the lining of the heart. It has been mainly in males more than females, mainly under 30 years of age.
You know, a very nuanced message there, really, isn't it, Owen, from Professor Karina Butler, when it comes to vaccinating the 12 to 15 year olds?
Yeah, it is, and I think it's part of trying to be very clear and allowing people make judgments. You know, the vaccines have three main goals. One is prevention of death and hospitalisation, and these all do this really well. The next is illness and absenteeism for people who don't get severely ill. And then the last bit is transmission blocking to vulnerable people. So for kids, it's really in those latter two. So it's got to be quite well balanced against any potential risks with the vaccines. And as she outlined, we've got to be clear that there are some. They're exceptionally rare. Last time I looked, there were about 200 million doses of mRNA vaccines in the EU and about 130 cases of this heart inflammation. And most of them are brief and short-lived and don't seem to have sequelae. So it's clear, you know, again, when you have close contact with somebody, an adult in your circle or a grandparent, that you want to be able to interact with them with confidence that you're not going to be able to give them COVID, against that sort of individual piece. Mm. And there's also other pieces about what are the long-term implications of COVID in the young, we don't know. And of course, there's balance about their loss of activities and access to things. The loss of school days when there's going to inevitably some issue around there's a case in a class and people are out. And, you know, the vaccine does offer other bonuses to people that way.
Yeah, so whereas with adults and over 18s, the message was very much this is recommended, get your vaccine. The message when it comes to children, if it's not vulnerable children between 12 to 15, it seems to be we will offer you the vaccine and here is all the information and you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all voluntary. It's all optional. Yeah. I think we need to let people have been in Ireland have been incredible in taking this up. We're lucky to have such a low level of vaccine hesitancy, and that's going to stand us in really good stead. And I think as it goes down through the age categories, it's been clear with people and letting them make those informed decisions about it.
Dr. Ronan Glynn, I know, was saying at the briefing today that childhood vaccination programs have been a particular target for misinformation, and he was warning parents to be aware of misinformation in the coming weeks and to be aware to not share anything on social media or family groups unless they're sure that it's true, and they can find out what exactly is true when it comes to vaccines on several reputable websites. You know, this is something that obviously always happens with vaccinations, but he seems to think it's a particular danger when it comes to childhood vaccinations. I don't know, would you share that view, Owen?
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of people who like to willfully spread this misinformation, it's a target area because any of us, you know, having children, they're so precious to us and we want to do what's right by them at all. They look to us for the guidance of it all. And so it's a really fraught area, but I absolutely echo that is getting sound information from reputable sources. And this is a global debate about the misinformation, not just about vaccines, but so many other things.
So finally,
and how we combat it.
Finally then, Dr. Tony Hulin was also speaking good news about the possibility of lifting some of the remaining restrictions that we have in place in the coming weeks. Let's have a listen. Oh, I don't think we have that clip, but that is basically what he said, which is that there is a possibility that in the coming weeks that some of those restrictions, social and economic, that are in place at the moment may be lifted. I don't know, Owen, could you speculate on what those might be? If you were Dr. Tony Hulin or you were the government and you were looking at lifting some of the remaining restrictions, which ones would you go for next?
Gosh, where do I begin?
Nightclubs.
Nightclubs. I think weddings and some of these big events and things that are life events. I mean, the nightclub hopefully will once again become a weekly or a twice weekly event for some, whereas weddings are once off things. Some of these big things that are life events for people. But look, I think there is encouraging signals in it. We need some more granular data, and it's nice to see some people in government looking for that. With the hospital numbers, we need to know who of those tested positive or weren't actually sick with COVID. You know, the trajectories of those balances and where the link is from cases to hospital, and that will allow us hopefully move through the phases and get more back towards normal. But I think there's going to be ill people with COVID for quite a while to come, but hopefully that'll be a smaller and smaller slice of the world.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. That's Dr. Owen de Barra, consultant in infectious diseases at Beaumont Hospital.